Agriculture can also contribute to a growing country's needs for large capital resources. This is all the more important because with the existing modern capitalist sector being small, there is little that can come from this sector by way of surpluses or profits for investments. On the other hand, agriculture, as is the case in India, is a big-sized sector. With expansion or raise in productivity in it, with little cost or investment, for example, through proper agricultural practices, land reforms, etc., it can contribute a lot in generating surpluses for industrial development. Japan's experience in its initial stages of growth between 1881 to 1911 to 1920 has clearly demonstrated that this is possible. Japan launched its economic development with severe overpopulation, with per capita income approximately low levels of Asia's underdeveloped countries at present, and with the average farm unit consisting of only 2 or 3 acres of highly fragmented land. It increased its agricultural output by 77%, with the area under cultivation increasing by only 21% as compared with increased yield per acre of 56%. This helped Japan in generating surpluses for investment. The next contribution of agriculture is providing employment. No doubt, in the final analysis, it is the industrialization of the country that provides adequate number of high-income jobs to the labor force, and the existing surplus labor will also be drawn into non-agricultural sector, leaving a small number behind. While this holds true in the long run, there is the immediate problem of providing more productive work to those who are depending upon this sector. An increase in productivity and production in agriculture will create more jobs and raise the volume of work to be done. In both ways, there will be an expansion of employment opportunities for a large number than before. Besides direct employment in the sphere of crop raising, agricultural expansion also provides work to other spheres. These are, for example, agro-industries based on agricultural inputs like edible oils, sugarcane, cotton, etc. These industries process these raw materials into semi-finished or finished goods. In addition, large employment opportunities are created in many activities to handle agricultural products. These are, for example, storage, transportation, banking, etc. The next contribution of agriculture is stimulus to industrial expansion. Large incomes of the rural people resulting from agricultural expansion can stimulate industrial growth. Although initially a large part of the additional incomes should go to savings or capital formation, yet in certain specific ways, the increase in the incomes output with the rural people can promote industries. The specific circumstances in which this can happen are as follows. 1. In case of certain industries in which investment at present is conditioned by future expectations, as is mostly in case of consumer goods industries, an increase in cash with the rural people can act as an effective weapon to stimulate such investments. 2. Even if a country opts for industries based on minerals, for example heavy industries like steel, engineering, etc., rather than on industries based on agricultural products, for example cotton, textiles, vanaspati, etc., a rise in agricultural products, in particular of food grains, is needed to smoothen the process of industrial development. Otherwise, with no or slow growing agriculture, there will be an underpriced rise in food grains and other food products, upsetting the course of industrial development. 3. After an initial push up, that is, when a country is on the way of development, it is all the more necessary that agricultural development keeps pace with the general advancement to sustain it with supplies of wage goods, inputs, and demand for manufactured goods. 4. Although saving will have to be encouraged, yet a part of the increase in cash balances may have to be allowed to be spent on consumer goods. This is necessary as an incentive to the agriculturist to produce more. Now, we have discussed the contribution of agriculture. In this, we discussed supply of food and raw material, supply of labor, supply of foreign exchange, resources for capital formation, providing employment, stimulus to industrial expansion. Now, coming to the next heading, place in Indian economy. As discussed above, agriculture plays an important role in the development of an economy. In this context, we now elaborate the present standing of agriculture in the Indian economy. In a nutshell, its position is an all-embracing one, so much so that the very existence of economic activities of the entire people is bound up with the state and health of this sector. This all-pervading influence can be gauged from the following facts and figures. Large share of national income. An aspect of its important stature can be seen from the large contribution it makes to the country's gross domestic product, GDP. Although this reflects the inadequate development of the non-agricultural sectors, yet this fact highlights the largeness of the proportion of agricultural products which mark the profile of domestic product by industrial origin. No doubt, with the faster development of the non-agricultural sectors, in recent years its share has fallen. Yet, it continues to be significant at about 27% at present. With still faster growth in future, its share may fall further because of higher growth of other sectors. But in terms of quantities, its standing in the economy will continue to be quite significant. Provides large employment and support for many activities. Being the producer of the largest amount of commodities in the country, it provides employment and work for living to an overwhelming majority of the Indian masses. Besides, a large number earn their living by working in occupations dependent upon agriculture, like storage, processing, and trade and transport of agricultural products. In villages, a large majority of the people earn their cultivation and allied agro industries. A considerable part of the labor force is in towns, and cities also finds jobs in marketing, export, and other activities connected with agriculture. The next is large supplies of food and fodder. In a poor country where a very large proportion of income is spent on food, it is of crucial importance that agriculture meets almost the entire food needs of the people. Certainly, imports of food grains have played an important role in meeting the needs of rising population. Yet, the fact should not be lost sight of that the proportion of food imports has always been small. Excepting the 2 years 1966 and 67, when food imports were higher than 10% of the net availability of food grains in the country, in most of the years these were less than 5%. In some years, these imports were marginal, and in others, there were in fact export of food grains. Agriculture also provides fodder to sustain livestock comprised of cattle, buffaloes, sheep, goats, horses, ponies, etc., and poultry. Their number runs in crores. This provides employment and income to the large many in the rural and hilly areas. Their produce constitutes a significant proportion, that is 26% of the output from agriculture sector. This excludes the contribution of animal draught power. The various products of the livestock are the sources of nourishing food, including milk, eggs and meat, of draught power for farm operations, and of commercial products like wool and hides. The next is large foreign trade. Agriculture contributes a sizable part to exports and is an important segment of imports of the country. The exports of agricultural products have been quite large and rising all through these years, particularly since 1970s. These exports at present constitute 15-20% of the total exports of the country. Besides the export of products from activities allied to agriculture constitute a significant proportion of the total exports. If to this we add the export of products based on agriculture, the contribution becomes larger still. This makes it an important contributor to the national kitty for foreign currencies. Not only it earns a sizable amount of foreign exchange, its earnings are of special significance for country's development. It is because its almost entire earnings are available for the import of non-agricultural development goods, as agriculture itself needs little imports as its inputs. Imports of agricultural products are important, although small in the country's foreign trade, their total value has often fluctuated. Nevertheless, there has been considerable. These form around 5-7% of country's total imports. Among import items, the important ones are pulses, oil seeds, animal and vegetable oils and fats, agricultural machinery and implements, etc. These imports for the agricultural sector involves expenditure of valuable foreign exchange. Thus, both from the angle of exports and imports, agriculture occupies an important place in the life and economy of the country. The next point is significant placing of government budgets. The budgets of the government of both the state and the center have been considerably influenced by the land revenues and tax income on the one hand and the expenditure on its development on the other. The total estimated yield from land revenue and other agricultural tax has been, for example, around ₹1600 crores. It is no doubt a small amount, a little less than 1% of the revenue from the state's tax. But all the same, it does make some difference to the revenues of state governments, who are always short in funds. Perhaps not incorrectly, this sector is being reviewed accordingly to the recommendation of Raj Committee as a potential source of big tax revenue in future. The more important budgetary operation having relevance to agriculture is a massive expenditure that is being incurred on it for several purposes, including a large part of agricultural development. This expenditure has increased from plan to plan and has been incurred for several activities like irrigation projects, animal husbandry, forestry, rural development, etc. The next point is influences agricultural structure, transport and other services. Agriculture through the provision of raw materials determines a large part of the country's industrial setup. Many industries process agricultural products and many other manufacture agricultural products into finished goods. Examples are vanaspati, rice bran oil, cotton seed oil, coconut and copra oil, cotton textile, jute manufactures, etc. These constitute a significant part of the industrial profile of the country, particularly in respect of consumer goods for domestic consumption and exports. Internal trade too is influenced much by the agricultural operations. In fact, quite a substantial part of the country's trade is in agricultural products. A large part of transport is also dependent on agriculture. No less is the support that other services like banking, storage, etc. get from large operations or in the agricultural sector. Next is considerable capital investment. A considerable part of the productive capacity of the country is in the form of agricultural assets like irrigation facilities, flows, storage capacity, etc. Every year, additions to this stock at around 6-7% of gross capital formation are being made both on government and private accounts. In absolute terms, the gross capital formation in the year at 1993-94 prices is at present 2000-2001 about rupees 16,500 crore. As such, it is not surprising to find that in the matter of investment also, this sector has an important place. It is thus obvious that agriculture occupies an important position in the Indian economy.
Now, we will look at main features of Indian agriculture. Indian agriculture, very important for the country's economy, is characterized by certain special features. A description of these will help us in forming a broad picture of this sector. These features are listed as under. The first feature is nature's uncertainties. A dominant reality of Indian agriculture is the fact that it faces several uncertainties on account of the nature. In respect of water supply, the most basic input, for example, the dependence on uncertain rains is much too much. For want of irrigation facilities, as much as over 60% of the land looks to rains for water. But the rains are grossly inadequate, highly irregular and very unevenly distributed as among regions. In a few places it rains too much, in others too little. As a result, we often get floods or face drought conditions. Strong dust-laden winds, locusts and other features of inclement weather make agriculture an uncertain occupation. As a consequence, one often finds large ups and downs in India's national income, trade, employment, government budgets, etc. The second feature is multiplicity of crops. The large variety in climate and soil conditions makes it possible for the country to produce many different kinds of crops. Compared to countries where only a few types of crops can be grown, India's position is satisfactory. This allows agriculture to meet the needs for different types of foods, raw materials, and diverse demands of exports. Besides, by judicious changes in the quantities of various crops, the harmful effects of uncertainties of agriculture can be minimized. A notable aspect of this multiplicity of crops is the predominance of food crops, which cover about 70% of the land under cultivation. The non-food grain crops are grown on the remaining land. The third feature of agriculture is diversity in other spheres. It is not only in crops that one comes across a large variety. In other spheres of agriculture too, one finds great diversity. There are large varieties among regions, and even within regions, there are differences in such matters as ownership of land, methods of irrigation, size of land holdings, system of agriculture, rotation of crops, etc. These differences are not the outcome of historical and economic factors only, but have also been caused by the differing social, political, and cultural reasons. These differences point to the fact that, in general, no uniform agriculture policy can fit in and can be effectively implemented throughout the country. Now, the fourth feature is semi-commercialized farming. Agriculture in India is neither fully commercialized nor wholly of the subsistence type. It's a mixture of both. As such, many describe it as a semi-commercialized farming. Subsistence farming is that where production is meant for self-consumption and not for sale. As against this, under commercial farming, production is undertaken primarily for sale in the market. In India, the bulk of food grains produced is meant to be consumed by farmers and their families in villages. However, in case of non-food grains, there is a large part that is marketed. The distinction between subsistence and commercial farming is relevant from the point of view of how the farmer reacts to the market signals in terms of changes in production and marketable quantities. The larger the extent to which farming is commercialized, the greater is the response from the farmer to price changes occurring in the market. Now, the fifth point is predominance of small farmers. A substantial number of cultivators in the country are small farmers. This is largely due to the backward nature of agriculture and rapidly rising population, which is leading to subdivision and fragmentation of holdings. As a result, farmers cultivate tiny pieces of land. Many of them do not own any land and work as tenants on lands belonging to others. With no or little resources, these farmers are unable to make any worthwhile investments in land, nor can they make other necessary arrangements for the required agricultural operations. As a result, agriculture is not carried on as a business. Instead, it serves merely as a source of subsistence. In such circumstances, progressive agriculture is just unthinkable. Now, the sixth feature is large inequalities. Another feature of considerable importance is that the agriculture scene is characterized by large inequalities. This is obvious from the wide disparities in the size of farming. The differences in operational holdings, that is, owned and or leased in land, reflect also the income inequalities as among the small and the large farmers. As per the data, that is from 1990 and 91, the small and marginal farmers with less than 2 hectares constitute 78% of the holdings, but the land they operate is barely 32% of the land. As against this, the semi-medium and medium holders with 2 to 10 hectares account for 20% of the total holdings. They operate as much as 50% of the land. The large holders with over 10 hectares constitute a very small proportion of the total landholders at less than 2%, but they operate as much as about 17% of the land. The seventh feature is low level of productivity. An unfortunate fact of Indian agriculture is the very low level of its productivity, whether measured in terms of output per hectare of land or per worker. Productivity is much below the level of advanced countries. It is 1/3 to 1/4 of the level of such countries, and in respect of some crops, it is even less. Several factors, technical, economic, and social, are responsible for this state of affairs. This aspect of backwardness of Indian agriculture is also indicated by the use of primitive implements, old way of organizing agriculture, and low level of modern inputs. The last feature is vast underemployment. Yet another dominant feature of Indian agriculture is the fact of massive underemployment. Barring a few places, where irrigation facilities permit double cropping, in almost the entire country, people dependent upon land do not get adequate work. A large number remains out of employment for 4 to 5 months or even more in a year. Those seemingly engaged in agricultural activities, in fact, are not so occupied. They make little contribution to production. Their unemployment is thus disguised, and this number is fast multiplying because of rapidly rising population on the one hand and slowly expanding job opportunities in non-agricultural sectors on the other. Now, we have covered main features of agriculture, which are nature's uncertainties, multiplicity of crops, diversities in other spheres, semi-commercialized farming, predominance of small farmers, large inequalities, and vast underemployment. Backward agriculture. Agriculture, as we have explained above, is very important for the Indian economy. Its size is very large and it has the capacity to contribute much to the development of the country. But it is very backward. In order that it fulfills its role satisfactorily, it is necessary that we understand its backwardness, find out the causes and adopt measures to pull it up. Unprogressive character. Indian agriculture, on the whole, it is not a forward-looking sector. This is evident from several of its weaknesses. One very important weakness is the slow rise in agricultural production and productivity, which has marked it in the many years since independence. The trend rise in growth at 2.7% has been just a little above the population growth. Two, equally significantly, is the unequal development of different regions of the country. There is a large agricultural land, about 3/4 of the total cultivated land, which is still without proper irrigation and or appropriate dry farming techniques, and where production trend is very low and productivity still lower. 3. The size of fixed capital, that is tube wells, dams, ponds, machines, warehouses, etc., is inadequate. As a result, the inbuilt capacity to expand and to withstand nature's uncertainties continue to be much less than required. 4. The use of modern inputs like research seeds, fertilizers, pesticides, etc. is not widespread. As a result, the productivity of land is very low and far below the world standards. The Green Revolution continues to remain confined to a few areas and to a few crops. 5. The social environment of agricultural sector is far from satisfactory. Agrarian relations are more or less semi-feudal in many parts of the country. There is a variety of tenancy systems with inadequate incentives for actual cultivators to invest and to do hard work. Owner cultivators are quite many, but most of them are very small farmers with little resources and very little or nil surpluses. 6. In quite many areas, agricultural practices are traditional and old and implements almost primitive. 7. The human factor is weak too. It is inhibited in outlook or attitudes by the traditional or old values. The scientific temper is conspicuous by its absence. In brief, the core of agriculture is unprogressive. Causes of backwardness. The factors responsible for the present deplorable state of Indian agriculture are many and varied. We describe them under the following three heads: unsatisfactory agrarian system, technical drawback, and weak human factor. Unsatisfactory agrarian system, the first point. One major cause is the agrarian system of the country, which offers little incentives to the farmers to put in their best. In fact, in certain cases, it is disincentive-ridden system. The tenurial system, which prevails in many areas, continues to be defective despite some reforms in it since independence. There is, for example, severe rack renting in many places. Large many tenants suffer from insecurity in a number of states. The reforms involving transfer of the ownership of land to the actual cultivators under the policy of ceiling on land and distribution of surplus have been far from complete. The system also suffers from the evils of subdivision and fragmentation of holdings. With the rapid increase in the rural population, the existing lands have been divided and subdivided into small pieces. As a result, the average size of the holdings has gone down to 1.9 hectares in 1990 and 91 from 2.3 hectares in 1970 and 71. Worse is that as many as 58% of all the holdings are of the size of less than 1 hectare. The farmers are further handicapped, particularly the small farmers, because of the widespread phenomena of fragmentation of their holdings. Large mini cultivators hold tiny pieces of land scattered over many places, often separated from one another by long distances. This makes farming very difficult and inefficient. The second causes of backwardness is technical drawbacks. The unfavorable agrarian backdrop is made worse by the inadequacy of various inputs such as water, seeds, fertilizers, etc. The availability of these necessary requirements for farming is inadequate in the country as a whole. But the unfortunate part of this is that whatever is available is unevenly distributed among regions and agriculturists. The unavailability of these inputs to certain regions and to small farmers, who, as we have seen, predominant, is caused by the inadequacy of credit facilities and organizational drawbacks. Other institutional arrangements for enabling the farmer to conduct his occupation as a business are also inadequate, and more so for small and marginal farmers who need them the most. India's financing agencies, for example, have yet to be oriented fully to the needs of the most important segment of the economy. Even in respect of marketing, most of the villages have yet to be integrated with the urbanites, both in terms of the transactions of agricultural products that the farmers have and the consumer goods and many inputs that they need. Again, in large many areas, the implements used for agricultural operations are inadequate, besides being primitive and totally unsuitable for scientific operations. The third drawback is weak human factor. The position in regard to the human factor in Indian agriculture is indeed very depressing. From the point of view of efficient farming, the so-called agriculturist is anything but an agriculturist. Hamstrung by the vicious atmosphere of caste and religion, the clutches of moneylender, lack of any organization, particularly of poor farmers, etc., on overwhelming number of cultivators are just subsistence farmers. They have neither the resources nor the opportunities to become progressive farmers. The farmer's capacity or skill is being further eroded with the large increase in the number of tiny and uneconomic farms. The deterioration in their living conditions tells heavily on their health, stamina and morals. No wonder much of the human factor in Indian agriculture is very weak indeed. Now, the measures for agricultural development. In view of the backward character of Indian agriculture, it is appropriate that we discuss measures that can promote its development. These measures may be described as under. Improving agrarian system. The first drawback was unsatisfactory agrarian system. So we will look how we can improve the agrarian system. The first and the foremost thing to do is to radically improve upon the agrarian relations which adversely affect the farming in many parts of the country. It is so important that every other effort is certain to fail without this. It is of crucial importance, especially for the small cultivators who constitute a very large majority of the farmers. The reforms involve such a change in the relations of the actual tiller with the soil that he gets totally dedicated to the agricultural operations from the beginning to the end. This is possible if the reform system gives the farmer adequate incentives so that he makes necessary investment in the land, works hard, follows proper agricultural practices, and takes ample care of the produce. One such change is needed in the tenurial system. It should make the rent of land fair, which the tenant pays to the landlord. Another aspect of this reform is that There should be a security about the tenancy conditions. The aim of these reforms is to enable the tenant to get a reasonable and assured return on his efforts. More importantly, it is desirable to make the maximum number of tenants or the actual cultivators owners of the land they cultivate, that is, making the tenant the owner of the land. An effective implementation of the present policy of ceiling on land and distribution of the surplus among the tenant farmers can be of great help in this direction. Another measure that can help a lot is to prevent further subdivision and fragmentation of holdings. At the same time, through consolidation of the existing small and scattered pieces, the small farms should be made viable propositions. The second measure to improve agriculture is improving human factor. A rightly reformed agrarian system will certainly be of key significance, but it will yield greater returns both in terms of output and income of the farmer if the farmer's skills and capacity for scientific farming are increased. This is because modern farming has become increasingly knowledge intensive. In order that the farmer produces efficiently, that is, more with the same input or same with lesser input, and in accordance with the internal and external demand, it is essential that he has a mind receptive to and necessary capabilities to use new technologies or innovations, and also he is well informed about the conditions in respect of inputs, outputs and prices. This is possible if there are adequate facilities and motivations for education in general, including adult literacy and technical. It is also necessary that infrastructure for the dissemination of information relating to agricultural business exist. There is also the need to provide means or channels for the scientific developments to reach the fields through, for example, demonstration farms. The provision of such basic necessities as drinking water, health and medical facilities, etc. is also important for adding to the physical stamina of the farmer. The third measure is growth and diversification. Since the growth rate of agricultural output, both food grains and non-food grains, is low in the context of the great potential and the large needs of the country, it is important to lay emphasis on the need to raise production and productivity of these crops. This should also apply to the activities allied to agriculture, namely horticulture, animal husbandry, dairy development and fisheries. While developing agriculture and activities allied to it, the concern should not only be with growth per se. Equally importantly, the aim of agriculture development should be to diversify the rural economy. As such, the development of activities allied to agriculture should be seen as contributing to the diversification of agriculture. Besides, efforts also need to be made to develop rural industries based on agriculture inputs. Such comprehensive approach will mean large many benefits, more work or more employment, higher rural incomes, a variety of products for exports and self-sufficiency and self-reliance in respect of basic necessities like food, fruits, milk, etc. Now the fourth measure is monetary incentives. In order to make the best of the favorable environment with reformed agrarian system and an improved human factor and a growth come diversified agricultural strategy, it is important that the farmer has enough of incentives, primarily monetary in nature. This has bearing largely on his income and what and how much he can purchase with it. To make his returns on agriculture attractive, several measures are necessary. The most important is to ensure remunerative prices of his produce, both for the produce he sells in the market and that he sells to the government. In this context, there is also an urgent need for large improvement in the marketing system of the country. It is also necessary that input prices are kept at reasonable levels so that the small farmers find it easy to purchase modern inputs like high-yielding seeds, chemical fertilizers, etc. Another key element in the package of incentives is crop insurance. This is necessary to safeguard the farmer against hostile factors over which he has no control and for which he is not responsible. These are, for example, natural calamities like floods, vagaries of the weather, and diseases of the crops, etc. Now, another measure is adequacy of inputs. While the farmer will himself arrange inputs, there is an urgent need to increase their supplies. As the country is very short of many of them, in particular modern inputs. Important among these inputs are water, high-yielding seeds, fertilizers, pesticides, etc. It is also necessary that these inputs reach the small farmers through agencies like the cooperatives. Credit has also to be made available to the farming community for it to produce inputs and to meet other needs of investment and consumption to bridge the gap between the production and the sale. It is also necessary that the inputs are improved through the introduction of new technologies and their use made more efficient through modern agricultural practices. In providing for inputs, it should be ensured that their availability is so arranged that the hitherto neglected crops and poorly developed areas or regions also benefit. The crops requiring a greater attention are, for example, bajra, jowar, maize, ragi, pulses, oil seeds, etc. Besides, the activities allied to agriculture have also to be looked after. As for regions, the eastern region with adequate rainfall and fertile soil has to be developed as its potential for large production remains grossly underutilized. Again, dry farming techniques are needed in places where rainfall is inadequate and which do not possess adequate irrigation facilities. All this is necessary to extend the green revolution, which has remained confined to a few crops like wheat and rice, and to a few regions in the north and northwest of the country. With this, we have covered measures for agricultural development, which are improving agrarian system, improving human factor, growth and diversification, monetary incentives, adequacy of inputs. Now, we will look at the progress of agriculture. Progress of agriculture. No doubt, agriculture is still backward in many respects, but it is also true that some notable progress has been recorded in this sector. We discussed the various developments that have improved upon the state of agriculture. We shall also refer to the weaknesses that still persist. Such an evaluation of the agricultural performance can be usefully taken up since the beginning of planning in 1951. Accordingly, the subject is being dealt with in terms of the government's planned efforts to pull up agriculture made in the last over 5 decades and actual improvements in the various spheres of agriculture and the shortcoming or handicaps that still mar the agricultural scene. All this will give us a comprehensive view of the agricultural progress. Now, first we'll look at government measures. During the last many years of planning, government has played an active role in the development of agriculture. Appropriate objectives have been laid down in the various plans. Corresponding to these objectives, measures have been spelt out and required resources have been earmarked for this purpose. We dwell upon each one of these elements of the planned efforts. Expanding government's role. Right from the first plan, the government realized that for the development of agriculture, government would have to play a crucial role. It was thought inevitable because agriculture was very backward and the poor agriculturists themselves could do very little in this regard. The various measures needed for the uplift of agriculture could be undertaken by the government alone. The large resources needed for the purpose too could be organized by the government. As such, the government through various plans undertook the big task of developing agriculture and improving the conditions of those associated with it. Keeping in view the important constraints of resources, priorities have been laid, and with removal or reduction of these constraints, the thrust in the government's approach have changed from time to time. Besides, through time the government's policy has become more comprehensive. In the beginning, irrigation and flood control were given higher priority. In recent years, the government's action has expanded to include programs for rural development and special area programs. As a result, almost all the facets of agriculture have been brought within the purview of the government's policy. These, for example, include crop raising, soil and water conservation, animal husbandry and dairying, fisheries, forestry, financial institutions, land reforms, cooperation, research and education, special employment schemes, etc.